running on fumes with very little sleep. We are live for the fourth straight day. It is WrestleMania Saturday. We have made it to WrestleMania weekend. But before we get to WrestleMania, of course, we have an NXT show that we have to talk about. This was the first show of the NXT 2.0 era outside of the Performance Center. In fact, this was the first time that NXT was back on the road in more than 2 years. And this is your NXT Stand and Deliver 2022 review. I am the Solemn Monster. Overall, what I thought was a genuinely shocking finish to an otherwise mostly enjoyable show. I thought this was a very strong show, even if the crowd didn't always seem like they were in agreement. But I was genuinely surprised by what we saw in the main event tonight. Dolph Ziggler defending the NXT Championship against Bron Breakker. This seemed designed to give Bron a big moment on the road in front of a few thousand people and have him regain the championship that he never lost. Remember, he wasn't pinned to lose the title. It was a triple threat match on television several weeks ago. He wasn't technically pinned or made to submit. And this felt like it was going to be the crowning moment here for Bron Breakker in 2.0. It didn't work out that way. Dolph Ziggler retained the NXT Championship to close out tonight. I don't even know what time of day it is. It's daytime, everybody. The daylight is shining through. I don't know what time of day it is. But he closed out today's show with a win over Bron Breakker, retaining the NXT Championship, which poses a few interesting questions that we'll tackle a little bit later on. The other standout moment here was very likely the end of an era in NXT. That's really been the story of NXT for a few months now. They ushered in a brand new era many months ago with the 2.0 crew. But tonight felt like another changing of the guard with Tommaso Ciampa losing to Tony D'Angelo. And as Tommaso Ciampa, what may well have been his final hurrah as a member of the NXT roster, as he is going to leave and head backstage, out comes Triple H, which in and of itself is a huge moment because this was the first time we've seen Triple H appear on a 2.0 show. This is the first time we've seen Triple H on any of these NXT shows or in an arena with people outside of the Hall of Fame last night when he was just sitting there on stage. We have not seen Triple H in this environment since before his heart situation and all the scary stuff that went with the heart failure that he experienced back in September, where he almost died, came very close to death. He walked out there and he shared a very emotional embrace with Tommaso Ciampa, somebody who he, you know, obviously positioned as one of his top stars in the 1.0 era. It really did feel like he was sending his last soldier off for the final time, sending him back home to his family. That's kind of what it felt like. It felt like the end of this long war. And Tommaso Ciampa was the last soldier standing. Triple H was the general there to kind of send him off one last time. Both men were all red in the eyes, very emotional moment there, but it was great to see Triple H, though. You know, until recently, we didn't know exactly how serious his situation was. The fact that he's even here at all is, I don't want to say a miracle, but it's something that he should be very grateful, I think, to be up and alive and breathing and moving around and even able to walk out there. And I think we're all very happy to see him, at least. So we have a lot to unpack here. We're going to get into everything. And also, you know, if the crowd sounded mild, because I saw some comments and some Twitter replies that people sent to me, you know, wondering, what do you think of the crowd? There's a reason for that, because there were only a handful of, I say a handful of a few thousand. They were set up for 5,000 in the building. I don't know walk-up business and comps and, you know, they do seat fillers now. You know, WWE now, they're doing seat fillers with every show. So I don't know how many people were actually in the building, but they only had less than 4,000 tickets out as of about a week ago in a building that they had only set up for 5,000. It fits a lot more than that. So yes, there were a lot of tarped off areas in the upper deck, and there were not a lot of people in the building relative to what they could have had. That may have played a role, but that's also not a complete excuse, because I've been part of crowds at independent shows that are much smaller than what they had in that building tonight in Dallas that sounded like a building full of 20,000 people. And so this crowd was just, you know, this was not one of those crowds. They were not overly enthusiastic about everything they were seeing, but it was still, I thought, a very good showing for the 2.0 crew here on this show. Hit that like button, and super chats are open, so any that come in, of course, as you know the drill. I'll be reading all your messages. If you have any last-minute comments or predictions for WrestleMania Night 1 tonight, get those on in, because we'll talk a little bit of WrestleMania after if you want to hang around for that. The kickoff match was the reunited Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez taking on Toxic Attraction for the NXT Women's Tag Team Championship. They had what I thought was an average match. Dolan and Jane hit their Toxic Shock finish. Dakota Kai kicked out. We had the return of Wendy Chu, her return after 2 weeks. You remember the television show from Tuesday when Dakota went looking for Wendy Chu in the in the back, she couldn't find her. She found her slipper and she found her belongings, and the implication is that she was either abducted or she was attacked, presumably by Toxic Attraction, so this was her grand return here. And so Wendy Chu popped up behind Gigi Dolan on the floor, and of course, Wendy Chu was Dakota Kai's tag team partner in the women's Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. And so she hit Dolan with her pillow, and then she splashed her orange soda. I guess maybe to match Gigi's hair color. She splashed her orange soda in her face, and Raquel Gonzalez came charging in, took Dolan down with a running boot in the ring. Dakota hit JC Jane with her running kick in the corner. And Raquel entered to deliver the Chingona Bomb to JC to win it for her team. And so Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai are the new NXT Women's Tag Team Champions. Toxic Attraction doing the job to Orange Soda. You hate to see it. Well, I guess they'd rather be doing the job to Orange Soda than Orange Cassidy. The crowd was mostly quiet because they still had people filing into the building. You got to remember, when they were making their entrances for this match, it was 11:45 in the morning, local time in Dallas. So you're not going to have an overwhelmingly loud crowd response to what's going on when people are still walking into the building. They're probably still rubbing their eyes from waking up the night before. A lot of debauchery going on in Dallas, I'm sure, on Friday night. A lot of late nights. A lot of late wrestling shows last night. All the degenerates are in Dallas, and they're drinking, and they're carousing, and they're having a good time. And so they came wandering on into the building, probably half dead to the world. I know that feeling. But anyway, I think the purpose of this, I think, in part, was to plant the seed of doubt that Mandy Rose would be walking out with her title. That maybe the idea was all three members of Toxic Attraction walked in as champions, and all three would leave without their titles, because Mandy Rose was going to be defending her championship later on in the night. But this did not have the kind of heat that you would want for a title change. The main card opened with the five-man ladder match for the North American Championship, the defending champion Carmelo Hayes, taking on Cameron Grimes, Santos Escobar, Solo Sikoa, and Grayson Waller. This was like a main roster Money in the Bank match. Tons of stunts, tons of dangerous spots involving the ladders and diving off the top of ladders, praying that nobody kills themselves. We had interference in the match from Trick Williams. Waller's bodyguard, Songa, was out there. Songa, by the way, is just... he served his purpose, I guess, with what they wanted him to do. But boy, you see this guy bump around. I use that word loosely when I say bump. He just sort of moves. He's very awkward out there. He is a large man, though. He is larger than most of the people, maybe everybody. Songa has to be the biggest guy physically on that roster in NXT, right? He's bigger than Walter. He's got to be the biggest guy down there. So he got involved, and we had Legado del Fantasma. They got involved as well at different points during this match. Some of the bigger spots, Grayson Waller is going to come out of this match probably as... I think for that last spot, more than any other, is probably going to be the one who is remembered for taking some of the more riskier risks in this match. Early on, he hit a cutter to Santos Escobar off of a ladder. There was an absolutely brutal sunset bomb spot involving Escobar, where Escobar went leaping over one ladder and he sent Solo Sikoa crashing down onto another ladder that was propped up in the corner. And this looked totally nasty. I mean, Sikoa took a wicked bump back first onto the ladder and sold the hell out of it afterwards. Trick Williams jumped in the ring to interfere a little bit later on. Sanga jumped in to cut him off. And Sanga then began to dismantle the ladder. So, you know, the ladder, when you open it up, it's got those, you know, pieces or hinges in the middle. And he used his hand and he broke the hinges off the ladder. He's basically like tearing this ladder apart. Electra Lopez climbed into the ring to confront Sanga. And that distracted him long enough for Raul Mendoza and Joaquin Wilde to fly into the ring with a pair of missile drop kicks. They sent Sanga out of the ring, and Lopez then climbed up to the top rope, and Electra Lopez came diving off the top with a crossbody down onto Sanga. Solo Sikoa went to give both Mendoza and Wilde a dual Samoan drop at another point. Couldn't support their weight. He looked very winded, and unfortunately, you could see it. It's like you see it happening in slow motion, and there's nothing that you can do about it. And he just sort of fell down. He couldn't support their weight. And then he just moved on to the next spot. Probably better to just move on to the next spot. It would have been very embarrassing for him to go back to the well a second time and then drop them again. Kind of like Undertaker at WrestleMania when he wrestled Roman Reigns. And they tried to do that spot where Roman kind of had him in position for a tombstone. Undertaker, he kind of fell and he tried to kick back up and he fell and he tried to kick back up and he fell. And I'm just sitting here going, oh, so embarrassing. Sometimes it's just better to cut bait and move on. So Trick Williams tried to interfere again. This time he starts climbing the ladder. He's going to climb the ladder and retrieve the championship for Carmelo Hayes. And why not? I mean, isn't that the way that Carmelo won Money in the Bank the first time? James Ellsworth is the one who climbed up there and unhinged the briefcase and dropped it down in her hands. So he's going to climb the ladder and try to retrieve the title. As he's climbing the ladder, Cameron Grimes comes in. He dumps the ladder. He tips the ladder over. And Trick takes that delayed bump out over the top rope, out of the ring, onto the pile of bodies on the floor. Grayson Waller was, at one point, fingertips away from the championship when Escobar stopped him with a Super Frankensteiner off a ladder. Cameron Grimes gave Solo Sikoa a cave-in on a ladder bridge, and then came the most ridiculous bump of the match, and the one where I certainly hope he's okay after this. There's a giant ladder. This ladder had to be every bit of 15 feet high, or 12. 12 to 15 feet high, outside the ring. And there's another ladder bridge, and I believe it was Carmelo Hayes who was laid out across the ladder bridge. Grayson Waller climbs to the top of this giant ladder, and he goes for that diving elbow drop that he does. So he got a lot of height. It looked very reckless. You know, when he does the elbow, it's just kind of this reckless looking, you know, elbow drop. And he comes flying off the top of this ladder and he crashed and burned. Now, he didn't crash through the ladder. Carmelo Hayes got out of the way and Waller basically clipped the ladder with his arm and broke part of it. It's not like his whole body went through it, but his arm, the way his arm crashed into that ladder and kind of broke it a little bit. Something broke all right. It wouldn't shock me to find out that he broke his arm or broke his elbow. These ladders, you could tell, I don't know if all of them are this way. They look wooden. They look like they're just painted on wood or some kind of wood-like material. So, it's pretty easy to notice when they break sometimes. You see the little pieces of wood, but whatever this ladder was made of, whether it was steel, whether it was wood, whether it was plastic, whatever the fuck it was made of, that could not have felt good. And I still would not be surprised to find out that he fractured his arm in some way, but hopefully he's okay. Very scary spot. In the ring, Escobar delivered a phantom driver to Carmelo Hayes, and then Cameron Grimes out of nowhere hit the cave-in on Escobar, and Cameron Grimes very quickly scurried up the ladder. He grabbed the Velcro belt, and he pulled down the North American Championship to win the match, and so Cameron Grimes, he did it for his late father. He is the new NXT North American champion. As soon as they introduced his father's name and his father into this storyline, and they had that promo that he cut, a very serious promo, it was very different than a usual Cameron Grimes promo where he's got that over-the-top voice and he's talking about to the moon. And this was a very subdued, very serious Cameron Grimes, a side that I think we should see more of. And when he talked about his father and how emotional it was to lose him a number of years ago, because his father passed away about 4 years ago, former wrestler, former wrestling promoter. I mentioned this on the podcast last week. He was actually one of the founding fathers of the Omega promotion that Matt and Jeff Hardy wrestled in when they were kids. So his father died at the age of 50 a few years ago. And so he dedicated this match to his father and his father's memory and said he was going to come in here and win the championship for his father. He was the only person who really had that kind of personal story going into this match. You could tell of all the men in this match, the five men in this match, he was the only person who had any real personal attachment to winning this match and winning this championship. For Carmelo Hayes, it would have just been another win to retain his title. For Solo Sikoa, we didn't hear from Solo Sikoa. Grayson Waller was just cutting the typical heel promos. Santos Escobar, same thing, but Grimes is the one who had the personal connection. So that gave away the finish to me. That's why I picked Grimes to win the match when I did my predictions last week. And it was very cool to see him get his moment here in this match tonight. I thought it was a fun car crash match. I thought the right man went over. Carmelo Hayes should be challenging for the NXT Championship soon. That probably would happen a lot sooner had there been a title change in the main event. So I don't see that happening, straight away, given that we still have a heel NXT champion. But he'll be challenging for that NXT title soon enough in the months to come. And the one other thing I'll say about this, Santos Escobar should be called up to the main roster yesterday. I mean, again, he's a tremendous talent who I think could contribute something on Raw or SmackDown at a time when there is a lack of depth on those rosters at the moment. There's a lack of depth on there in a lot of areas, and tag teams and women, top babyface, especially on the SmackDown side. He wouldn't be a babyface if he got called up, I don't think. Not at first, but he needs to be on the main roster. Tommaso Ciampa, in quite possibly his last stand here in NXT, one of the last soldiers of a bygone era of this brand, has been teasing going into this match on this show that this could be it for him. This could very well be his swan song in NXT. One-on-one against Tony D'Angelo, who came to the ring accompanied by AJ Galante. AJ Galante is somebody who I wasn't too familiar with, and so upon doing some research on Mr. Galante, he is a boxing promoter, but he is also a manager for a minor league hockey team that was the subject, apparently, of a Netflix documentary. But really what this kid is known for is his father, Jimmy. Jimmy Galante, who is a known associate of the Genovese crime family. So Tony D'Angelo living the gimmick on this show. And Galante came down to the ring, and he sat ringside for this match in Tony D's corner, although he never got involved in the match. Wade Barrett said that the two of them met over social media, and now they're in cahoots. So that's the story behind these two being together. Ciampa grabbed a water bottle off the announce desk when he came out for his entrance, and he did the water spit as an homage to Triple H on the apron, and then when he got in the ring, he did the old Shawn Michaels pose. So paying tribute to, I guess, his, they're like fathers to him, I guess, right? Been working with them for so long. So he was paying tribute to DX. D'Angelo retrieved his trusty crowbar here for the finish. He took a swing at Ciampa with, or near the finish. This wasn't the finish, but he got his crowbar, took a swing at Ciampa with it, but Ciampa ducked. And when the referee picked up the crowbar to dispose of it outside the ring, D'Angelo, with the ref's back turned, delivered a low blow to Tommaso Ciampa and then hit his twisting fisherman's buster finish. But Ciampa got a shoulder up at 2.5. He kicked out of D'Angelo's finish. Tony went outside to grab the crowbar again, but on his way back inside, Ciampa cut him off and hit the Willow's Bell DDT, and then he hit the fairy tale ending. But D'Angelo kicked out, so both men got to kick out of each other's finish. Ciampa applied a crossface. D'Angelo got to the ropes. The fight spilled outside, and there was a random Johnny Wrestling chant. I don't even know what inspired it. I don't know why all of a sudden in this one spot they started chanting for Johnny Gargano, but it was a fleeting chant. It came and it went. D'Angelo, though, caught Ciampa with a DDT on the exposed floor outside. I believe it was Ciampa who pulled up those mats earlier in the match, and so he basically set up his own demise. It backfired on him, and he got DDT'd on the floor. D'Angelo rolled his dead body back inside, delivered a boot to the side of the head, and then covered him for the 1-2-3. Felt a little underwhelming, just because we've seen Ciampa in so many wars and so many takeover main events where it took so much punishment to put this guy away, and then to see a simple shot to the side of the head, a kick to the side of the head, and then, you know, he gets pinned. But at least they did the DDT spot on the floor. He was DDT'd on the exposed floor, so there is that built-in excuse. This was not the best match of Tommaso Ciampa's NXT career. However, it was one of the best matches that I have seen Tony D'Angelo have in his short career in NXT. And it was more important for Ciampa to give him the best match of his career than for D'Angelo to go in there and give Ciampa the best match of his. So to that end, I think it served its purpose. That's what this was designed to do. It was designed to get D'Angelo over, not Ciampa. He had a cheat to do it. He is a heel, after all, but he did pick up the win. You know, after, well, I'll get to that in a second. There was some more stuff that happened here. So D'Angelo leaves with Mr. Galante. I guess they're going back to the bada bing. So now Tommaso Ciampa is left all alone in the ring. The music stops, and he's getting a nice reaction. He's getting a nice little standing ovation from the crowd. Nothing too overwhelming, but he's getting thank you, Ciampa, chants from the audience. I said in my predictions when I was talking about this match, if you remember. Oh, the guard. Okay, that's what it was. Bliss fan, thank you. I looked at it as a cross. See, that makes sense now. That makes sense now. You could tell I'm running on fumes as far as the lack of sleep. The crossface, it was the Gargano escape. See, I made a note here that he put a crossface on him, but if it was the Gargano escape, then Johnny Wrestling chance would make sense. And actually, that's even better that he would use that move in possibly his final NXT match, that he would use, you know, his best friend and former tag team partner's move. So that does explain why we got the Johnny Wrestling chant. But I said in my predictions that this had to be a win. This felt like just a no-brainer win for Tony D'Angelo, simply because the last program that he had was with Pete Dunne, before they butchered Pete Dunne. So in that feud, it ended, if you remember, with the weaponized steel cage match, and Pete Dunne beat him. Pete Dunne got the last laugh on Tony D'Angelo, and then he got called up to SmackDown. So it would make no sense for them to have back-to-back programs with this guy, have him lose, only for the veteran to then leave and go to the main roster. It's supposed to be the opposite, where the veteran puts the guy over before he gets called up and leaves the territory. It wouldn't make any sense to do that twice in a row to Tony D'Angelo. And if it sure looks like Ciampa is leaving. So if that's the case, this had to be a win for Tony D'Angelo. It didn't make sense any other way. And look, as far as Ciampa going to the main roster, I wish him well. I don't have a lot of high hopes. Hope I'm wrong. I don't have a lot of high hopes. Case in point, SmackDown. Last night, we had the Budget Cuts Battle Royal on SmackDown last night, and Tommaso Ciampa was there. No fanfare. He wasn't even in the graphic listing the match in the first place. The only people who were left out of the graphic for the Battle Royal last night who ended up being in the Battle Royal were Tommaso Ciampa and T-Bar. Not a good sign, I think, for Tommaso Ciampa going forward. But I wish him well. As Ciampa was leaving, he's almost to the back. We hear Triple H's King of Kings song. And here comes Triple H out in his suit to a great reaction. First time we've seen him since they blew up his baby. The first time since he almost died. And he shared an emotional hug with Ciampa to give his last remaining soldier a proper send-off. It was a very cool, very genuine moment between the two. Ciampa was a very big part of Triple H's NXT for many years. Former NXT champion. And you could tell. You could tell how much each man means to the other. Ciampa looks to Triple H as a father figure in many ways. Triple H looks at Ciampa and he respects the hell out of him. And you could tell just based on the way he booked him for all those years. 7 years is a long time. Either that or Triple H was crying because he realizes what's about to happen. That could very well be part of it too. I think he's genuinely happy and appreciative for Tommaso Ciampa, but I do think on some level Triple H also realizes you are so fucked. And he feels bad for the guy. So hence, there were a lot of tears flowing for various reasons here in this segment. But it was a very genuine moment, and one last rest in peace to the black and gold brand. Last night, The Undertaker went into the Hall of Fame. He said now he can finally rest in peace. And tonight, now the NXT black and gold brand can finally rest in peace. We had Imperium, the Creed Brothers, and MSK, triple threat match for the NXT Tag Team Championship. They changed Imperium's music. They changed Imperium's music to something generic. First, they take away Walter's name. Now they take away Walter's music. What's next? I can only imagine the wardrobe change that might be coming for poor Walter. Maybe they'll put him in overalls. Remember Uncle Elmer back in the 80s? Had a big wedding on Saturday night's main event. Maybe they'll put him in overalls. Some Oshkosh bagosh for Walter. They changed his music. And here's my question. I know they change people's names and they change people's music all the time and whatever. In some cases, it's not a big deal. This is just baffling to me. The music they were coming out to before, I'm almost positive. It's a classical piece of music that I believe is public domain. So it can't possibly be a rights issue. This, to me, just feels like change for the sake of change, which annoys the fuck out of me. If you want to make a change for the better, go for it. Change for the sake of change always annoys me because it's completely unnecessary. So I would love to know the inner workings and the inner discussions as to why this music had to change. Plenty of action in this match, though, condensed into the 10 minutes that they gave these men. Creeds were on a roll early on. We even got a cannonball dive to the floor by Brutus. He is the bigger of the Creed brothers. His brother Julius got sent into the ring steps a few moments later. Imperium gave Brutus a European bomb at ringside. Nash Carter used a sunset bomb to escape another European bomb attempt by Imperium. Wesley caught Marcel Bartel with a Frankensteiner, which sent Bartel into a powerbomb by Carter to give MSK the 1-2-3, and MSK regain the NXT Tag Team Championships, and they did it without their shaman. They didn't even need Matt Riddle for it. Did not even need Matt Riddle. You know, the original shaman was going to be Jeff Hardy before he got fired by WWE. Little side note there. Speaking of Jeff Hardy, looks like he may have had a rough night last night. I saw some video. I guess there was some kind of a super show or something that Conrad was running with. You know, Bischoff was there and Jeff Jarrett was there. William Regal was on stage and there was Jeff Hardy. And I don't know. There were some reports from the show that Jeff was acting a little erratic. So hopefully everything is okay with Jeff Hardy. But there were no boo birds either. You know, MSK picks up the win and they regain their tag team titles. And no boo birds because they weren't in the performance center where they get booed by a certain segment of the audience. We've talked about this before. Izzy, her parents, her father, they had some kind of an issue in the past with comments that were made by Nash Carter. And anyway, they get people, apparently they've gotten people to boo MSK whenever they come out. Well, they weren't in Orlando. They were in Dallas. And so we didn't have that issue tonight. But this was good. Moved very quickly because they probably realized they didn't have too much time. 10 minutes. You know, three very talented teams. Very clear the Creeds are the greenest of the teams, but I still like the Creeds a lot. I like their upside a lot. I think they're going to turn into A great tag team addition to the main roster one day, I hope. But, you know, 10 minutes, that's not a lot of time to get your shit in. But I thought it was good for the time that it lasted. We had a fatal four-way for the NXT Women's Championship. Mandy Rose defending against Cora Jade, Io Shirai, and Kaylee Ray. There were moments where Cora's inexperience was very apparent. She was the weak link in this match. You got to remember, the girl is 21 years old. She's still very new to this. Very new to this. And she's not going to be as crisp as Io Shirai or Kaylee Ray are going to be, which is why it was important to get people like Io Shirai, like Kaylee Ray, into this match. Mandy Rose is no ring general. You want a ring general? You got Walter. I think of ring general, I don't think of Mandy Rose. I think of Walter. I think of General Adnan. I don't think of Mandy Rose. So it was important to get people like Io and Kaylee Ray into this match. Turning this into a four-way was the best thing they could have done, because if they would have kept this as a singles match for the championship between Mandy and Cora, it probably would have been a mess. They were able to avoid that, and what ended up happening was this was one of the best matches on the entire show. In fact, if you were to tell me that you thought this was the best match of the night, I wouldn't necessarily argue that. I mean, I think some people would say the latter match, but this was actually a very good match. And I don't think it would have been nearly as good as it was if it was a singles match instead of a four-way. Mandy gave Cora an ugly vertical suplex at one point where she almost lost her. Cora dumped Rose to ringside and hit Mandy with a cannonball. Kaylee Ray hit Cora Jade with a cannonball from the top to the floor. And then Io Shirai had to get in on the action. She hit Kaylee Ray with a moonsault and caught her leg on the announce desk. I was a little concerned at first that the angle, the first angle they showed wasn't very good, and it looked like she could have done some damage to that leg on the way down. On the replay, it didn't look as bad, but she was hobbling after that. When she got back in the ring, she was hobbling on her leg for a couple of minutes there. Inside the ring, Kaylee Ray locked Mandy in a Koji clutch, and Io at the same time locked Cora in a Texas Cloverleaf. So we had dual submissions going on here. Cora escaped and kicked Shirai into Kaylee Ray to break up Ray's hold. Cora caught Kaylee Ray with a Canadian Destroyer on the apron. Io caught Jade on the back with a 619. So Cora hits this Canadian Destroyer, and she's still on the apron. And as she's starting to climb back in the ring, here comes Io with the 619. So we got the rare reverse 619. Usually kick the person in the face. In this case, she kicked Cora right in the lower back. Mandy and Io brawled to the top rope. Io took Mandy over for a top rope Spanish fly. Cora broke up Shirai's pin with a diving senton that looked like an old Jeff Hardy swanton bomb, where he would 95% miss the person's body. The back of his head maybe would clip their arm. That's what this looked like. She missed most of it. And then Cora caught Mandy with a wonky-looking sliced bread and then a modified pay dirt for a two count. Kaylee Ray caught Cora with a gory bomb. Io shoved Kaylee Ray off the top rope when she went up top. And that was the end of Kaylee Ray. She went flying to the floor. Io went up. She hit Jade with her top rope moonsault. But before she could go for the cover, Mandy Rose, lying in wait, slides back into the ring. And she hits her running knee strike to Io for the pinfall win. That finish right there is right out of my predictions from last week. If you remember when I was talking about this match and who I thought was going to win, and I said, I think Mandy Rose is going to retain her championship, and she's going to probably steal the pin away from somebody else in this match. That's basically what happened here. The only difference is I thought that somebody would hit their finish like Io did on Cora. I thought when Mandy got in, she was going to shove Io out of the way or throw her out of the ring and then pin Cora. Instead of pinning Cora, she pinned Io, after she hit her with the knee strike. But otherwise, this played out exactly the way that I expected it to. This was very good. Cora Jade is absolutely not ready to be the NXT Women's Champion. It would have been the wrong move to put that title on her now. She'll be ready one day. She'll be ready one day. She's very likable. I think she could absolutely be champion one day. But she's 21 years old. She's still rough around the edges. It would have been way too soon to do a title change and put the belt on her. And I would have kept it on Mandy, too. I think it made sense to do that, especially with the other members of Toxic Attraction losing their belts. You want to at least keep some gold in Toxic Attraction. And they still have that women's championship. We had Walter, or Gunther. We had Walter one-on-one against LA Knight. Between the name change, now the music change, they're just stripping everything about this guy away. Piece by piece, they're stripping everything about him away. The one good thing is that Walter is so fucking good. They can change his name. They can change his music. Hopefully they don't change his wardrobe, but they could change that too. He's still Walter. He's still very good at what he does. So I think he can overcome it. When the fight spilled out of the ring early on, Walter powerbombed Knight on the ring apron, started going after his lower back at that point. He put him in a Boston Crab. He was trying to punish him a little bit further. LA Knight made a comeback, hit a superplex. Both men got back to their feet. They were trading strikes. Walter locked on a sleeper hold. Knight countered and lifted him up into a torture rack position and then hit a modified, it was almost like a modified burning hammer. Walter starts throwing some chops and he clotheslined LA Knight off the turnbuckles. Came off the top rope with a big splash right across Knight's injured back. Picked him up, hit a powerbomb, and pinned him 1-2-3. This was, in many ways, a very basic professional wrestling match, but that's kind of what I liked about it. You know, we had the ladder match, which was just pure insanity. It was spot after spot after dangerous spot after dangerous dive. The tag team match, 10 minutes of all action with the men in the MSK match. We needed a bit of a cool down. This was more of a traditional match, which is what Walter is all about. You're not going to see Walter out there falling in fucking thumbtacks. You're not going to see Walter out there doing 630s. You're not going to see Walter out there doing dives. The biggest thing he does is a big splash off the top rope. But the guy is a beast. When he hits you, you can feel it. When he chops you, you can see it. You can see the blood. You can see the red welts on the person's chest. You can feel it deep in your soul, the way that he chops some of these people. LA Knight didn't even get it as bad as most people do when it comes to the chops. Go watch that Duke Hudson match with Walter and Duke Hudson from a couple of weeks ago when he chopped Duke Hudson. I said he chopped the soul out of that man. LA Knight didn't get it nearly as bad as he did. But I enjoyed this. Nothing overly spectacular about it. LA Knight loses a lot. For somebody in his position who's over, who comes out and feels like a superstar, he loses an awful lot. All this did was just, to me, it seals the deal. He's on his way to Raw or SmackDown. Frankly, I think SmackDown can use him a lot more than Raw. But the good thing about him is he can play babyface. He can play heel. Whatever you need him to do, he's done both. He can talk. He's got a certain presence about him. And the thing about him is he's almost 40 years old. He's not getting any younger. I don't know what they're waiting for. They need people. They need new challengers and new faces on that main roster. He seems to check all the boxes for what Vince McMahon and Bruce Pritchard would want. He's not an overly flashy guy, but again, he carries himself like a star. He can talk. He's got charisma. He's got personality. What more do you want? What are you waiting for? Got to be getting the call. I expect him to be on television on Monday night or on Friday night this week. And if not, then these people don't know what the fuck they're doing. Him losing here only solidified that further. Him losing to Walter doesn't matter to LA Knight if he's going to leave anyway. And then for the NXT Championship, we had Dolph Ziggler one-on-one. And what was the last pay-per-view singles main event that Dolph Ziggler has had? When is the last time that we have seen Dolph Ziggler? I'm not talking a Royal Rumble match or anything like that, but in a pay-per-view main event like this. It would probably take a while to figure out what the answer to that question is. It's been some time. So this was a bit of an unusual position for him to be in. Defending the NXT Championship here in this main event against Bron Breakker. Right, shout out to Steve in the chat. Steve Mello joining us here. Says, smash that like button. It does help the video out. Bron Breakker was at the Hall of Fame last night to introduce his father and his uncle. into the class of 2022. His Uncle Scott out there talking about cows and the Macho Man. Something I didn't expect to hear about going into the Hall of Fame last night. Cows and the Macho Man. Probably not the kind of story that you're thinking. If you don't have any context to that, you're probably, I can imagine what you're thinking, but I assure you it's not what you're thinking. Anyway, Bron Breakker, he is in the back. He's getting ready to come out and make his entrance. And Breakker walks up to a table, and sitting on top of this table is a multicolored chainsaw in the colors of the paint splotches, the colors of NXT. The least intimidating looking chainsaw that you've ever seen in your life. They should have just put little red bows on it or drawn little rainbows on it. He picks up the chainsaw and he comes out, and on stage they have three giant letters. We see the N, we see the X, we see the T. We've seen this before. They did it with the old 1.0 logo, right? When what show was that? Was that Halloween Havoc? Might have been Halloween Havoc. And he kicked the X, right? He kicked it in half. So here they had three letters again. And here comes Bron with his chainsaw. And he takes the chainsaw and he cuts the X in half right down the middle. Cuts the thing in half. I guess this was supposed to be because they were in Texas. So my only assumption is that this was some kind of a play off of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, being that they were in Texas. I could be wrong about that. But this might have looked a lot cooler if it wasn't so obvious that these letters were made of styrofoam. I feel like he probably could have taken the letters and just ripped them in half with his bare hands. I don't know. A chainsaw going through styrofoam just doesn't feel very cool to me. And they have to be very careful. You know, if they're going to come up with ideas for him to be doing stuff like this, if it is uncool, that's the surest sign that the crowd might soon start to turn on Bron Breakker. It's like when they made that little change to Damian Priest. He was never the same after that. Now I'm seeing rumors that Damian Priest could very well be bound for a new heel faction led by Edge on Monday Night Raw. That might not be such a bad idea. I could get behind that. He needs something because he used to be over and now he's not. So if Edge wants him in a heel faction on Raw, that's probably the best possible thing he could ask for. But WWE has a tendency to play with things a little too much and then take something that's really over and cool and make it very uncool. I don't want to see that happen to Bron Breakker. Bobby Roode was in Dolph Ziggler's corner. He got ejected early when he tried to interfere in the match. Breakker hit some power moves. Dolph, though, slowed things down for a little while. Bron made a comeback, hit a Tilt-A-Whirl slam, perched Ziggler up top, and hit a top rope Frankensteiner. It took him down to the mat. He went for the cover. And he only got two. Breakker cut Ziggler in half with a Goldberg-esque spear. I have to give Bron Breakker a lot of props for his spears. They look devastating when he delivers them. He delivers them with such intensity and such impact. If you're going to do a spear, this is the way that it should look. And he cut this man in half. Ziggler sold it great, just like he did when Goldberg demolished him at SummerSlam a few years ago. Ziggler sent Breakker, though, out to the floor after this. And when he climbed back inside, Breakker climbed back inside, Dolph connected with a knee to the jaw, only got two count on the cover. Breakker came back with another wicked spear. And then Gorilla pressed Ziggler over his head, hit the power slam, but when he went for the cover, Bobby Roode came back out and he pulled Ziggler out to safety. And it made me think, you know, Roode was ejected from the ringside area, right? And usually when somebody is ejected, they don't come back out. Bobby Roode came back out because I think Bobby Roode realized, wait a minute, this referee has no power over me. The referee said, go to the back. I went to the back. What the fuck's he going to do to me if I come back out there? So he just came back out and interfered anyway. So if there are no repercussions for this man, it's open season. Anybody can get ejected and just come right back out. I'm saying, you're going to have rules, you have to enforce them. Bobby Roode, we should at least be told that Bobby Roode was fined, you know, $10,000 for disobeying protocol. Something. Otherwise, it's open season. Ziggler is outside the ring with Roode. And Bron Breakker hits the ropes. He does a dive out onto both men because everybody must dive. I'm going to have a new t-shirt design made. Everybody must dive. With a little picture of some little silhouette in my head on the body in mid-dive. You'll see Solomonster in mid-dive going out over the top rope. That'll be the new shirt. So he threw Bobby Roode into the ring steps, but when Breakker climbed back inside, Ziggler hit the Famouser and the Zigzag. Back to back, one right after the other. Ziggler went for the pin. Bron kicked out at 2.5. Ziggler climbed up top, came off with a great diving elbow. I love this diving elbow. Beautiful diving elbow by Dolph Ziggler. He got some height on that. He put a little something extra on that one. But again, Bron kicked out. Ziggler started tuning up the band. He went for the super kick, but then he stopped dead in his tracks. When Breakker confronted him, he just stood there, staring at him. And for whatever reason, Dolph just stopped. He just, in fear, I guess. He just stopped in his tracks. Breakker took him down with a hard clothesline. And a third spear connects. Dolph goes up for the gorilla press, but then he rakes the eyes. And he falls back to his feet. He shoves Bron Breakker forward, and Breakker goes face first into the exposed middle turnbuckle. I had forgotten that earlier in the match, the buckle was exposed. And so Bron went right into the exposed buckle, and as he kind of falls backwards out of the corner, Ziggler catches him with a super kick, falls on top of him, and gets the 1, 2, 3. Hamwall, that's pretty good. He says, life sucks, and then you die. I like that. That's very clever. I like that. Life sucks and then you dive. But Dolph Ziggler gets the pin. I was genuinely shocked by that finish. For all the reasons I mentioned earlier, but even in this match, they had Breakker kick out of everything that Dolph did, all of his big finishing moves, the Famouser, the Zigzag, he kicked out of him. And Ziggler still somehow found a way in the end to pull it out and pick up the win. That surprised me. But you know what? In a way, I'm actually happy for the guy. When I saw him celebrating at the end of the show and he had that big smile on his face and he's so happy and the announcers are putting over Dolph Ziggler, I just thought to myself, give the man his flowers for a change. Why not? How many more of these occasions is he going to have in this company? Give the man his flowers. Let him enjoy his moment. Question now is, what are they doing with Bron Breakker? Are they setting up for a rematch? Because it was not exactly a clean win for Dolph Ziggler. With the turnbuckle spot, Roode getting involved, this seems ripe for a rematch. Possibly in a cage, some kind of a stipulation. I think we're headed for a rematch. I still say Bron Breakker ends up winning back the NXT Championship. Because the only other possible outcome is that the reason they did this is because they want to rush Bron Breakker to the main roster. And I can understand the desire to want Bron Breakker up on Raw or SmackDown, but as I watched him in this match, this was not the best that he has looked. There were some very, shall we say, green moments. It almost looked a little like the Green Hornet in this match. Just long enough to remind you that, okay, he is still learning. He is still relatively new to this. NXT is probably the right place for him to be for another 6 months, 9 months, maybe a year. I actually think if they call him up now, after seeing him in this match, that's probably not the best idea. Now, I've seen people get called up before who had half the talent that Bron Breakker has. And they get called up anyway, and they have to find a way to make it work. It's not as if he gets called up this week, he's going to automatically fail. Or he's going to, you know, he's just going to embarrass himself and have bad matches. He'll probably adjust. I just think he's somebody who would benefit by staying down there a little bit longer and getting some more seasoning. That's the whole point. I thought that was the whole point of NXT. I know they're trying to get the superstars of tomorrow prepped today. But sometimes you got to leave them down there a little bit longer to simmer for a little bit because they're not quite seasoned enough. It's like taking the chicken out of the oven before it's ready. Yeah, it might still be good. You might not get sick, or you might have the runs for the rest of the week. You might end up having the shits. Why take the chance? Leave it in there a little bit longer. It'll be done soon. That's kind of my attitude about Bron Breakker. They have people in LA Knight and Santos Escobar, who could be called, and Walter, frankly, but Escobar and LA Knight could conceivably be called up this week. You can get new blood on those rosters this week without calling up Bron Breakker. So I don't think he's being called up right away. I do think we're going to get a rematch. And I do think that, look, if the idea is to, I still think the goal is to transition that championship over to Walter before this year is over. And if that is the case, then it wouldn't really make a whole lot of sense for him to be taking the title from Dolph Ziggler. I think it needs to end up back on a babyface, and whoever that babyface is, maybe it's Braun, he eventually drops the title to Walter. And then he can go to the main roster. But I think it would be premature to do a call-up with him right away when you have other people who are more than ready to step up and go to Raw, go to SmackDown, who aren't getting any younger. You don't have to call Braun up right away. So that was the NXT show. Let's take a look at the poll. That's right, Dope Rebel. Wash your chicken, too. If you're going to prepare chicken, do it right. Here's the stand and deliver poll. Just fell under 50. Was it over 50% before? I see it just fell below 50% thumbs up. 34% thumbs in the middle. And 16% thumbs down. So again, that poll is going to be up for a couple more days. If you would like to go ahead and vote, at Solomonster. That is my handle on Twitter. At Solomonster is the place to go. I do want to thank everybody, by the way, who is joining here on a Saturday afternoon, WrestleMania Saturday. We are literally getting ready for WrestleMania here. The kickoff show is less than 2 hours away. I don't know what matches are going to be on the kickoff show, but 6 o'clock Eastern, the kickoff show begins for WrestleMania Night 1. So we don't have a whole lot of time left here. But what I do want to do is just very quickly before I get to your super chats. And again, if you're going to send them on in, now's the time to do it. Because once I go through them, we're going to get the hell out of here. Tonight is WrestleMania Night 1. I am going to be back with you live as soon as WrestleMania goes off the air. 11:30, 12 o'clock, whatever time it is. Could be midnight. Come on back here. Not only are we going to be going over the WrestleMania card tonight and everything that happened, the good, the bad, the ugly, we are doing a Wrestle Rumble contest as well. We're going to be giving away some championship belts. And there is still time to enter the Wrestle Rumble contests. There's actually more than one. You can go to WrestleRumble.com, get all the information there, and buy your entry. And there's a pick'em contest, and there's belt giveaways, only $1. It's $1 to enter. And we're doing two contests this weekend. I get to pick the winners of the first one tonight. And I believe that's I think tonight is the Stone Cold one, the Stone Cold Championship belt giveaway. So I'm looking forward to that. But here's the rundown for tonight. Of course, we have Stone Cold Steve Austin on the KO show with Kevin Owens. Is it going to be a match? Is it going to be a brawl? Are they going to do an arm wrestling contest? Are they going to have a political debate? We don't know. All we know is that Stone Cold is going to be on the show, and it's very likely he is going to be closing the show tonight. We have the SmackDown Women's Championship on the line. Charlotte Flair defending against Ronda Rousey. We have Edge against AJ Styles. Or was that moved? I think it was moved. That match has flip-flopped so many times. I believe it's been moved back to Sunday. I don't think it's tonight. But we have the Raw Women's title on the line. Becky Lynch against Bianca Belair. We have Seth Rollins taking on a mystery opponent. We don't know who it is. Could be anybody. Based on what you guys were saying in the chat last night, it could be The Undertaker. So, I don't know. I've heard about this Cody guy, but I don't know. We'll see. Usos defend the SmackDown Tag Team titles against Shinsuke Nakamura and Rick Boogs. Drew McIntyre takes on Happy Corbin after Corbin insulted his dead mother on SmackDown. If you didn't see SmackDown, boy, did you miss a show last night. Rey and Dominic Mysterio take on The Miz and Logan Paul. And Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods of The New Day take on Sheamus and Ridge Holland, who, of course, will have Butch in their corner. And that is the lineup for Night 1 of WrestleMania tonight. Why is everybody saying The Fiend? Everybody is mentioning The Fiend. I know The Fiend is in Dallas. I think, wasn't he at WrestleCon? I saw a picture of Bray actually with Issa. I think he was with New York City Demon Diva. Shout out to Issa. He looked in pretty good shape. He looked like if he wanted to climb back into the ring, he could, but I don't know. The last time we had Rollins in the ring in a major match with The Fiend, I know they had a second match that, you know, wasn't as bad as the first one, but man, that Hell in a Cell match from 2019, I can't, it triggers horrible memories and flashbacks in my brain. I really don't have any interest in seeing those two in the ring together ever again. So no, hopefully, I'll take Cody over The Fiend. All right, let's see who we got here. We got Shin Akuma. Ziggler winning shocked the hell out of me. Welcome to the Solo Monster Party Day and Night 4. It is night, well, it's day 4. Soon to be night 4. Thank you, Shin Akuma. I do appreciate your support. Nick Grosso with the 1999. Good show. Surprise Ziggler beat Breaker. Either he's going to the main roster or we are getting a third match. Well, it has to be one or the other, right? I mean, you're not really narrowing it down. Those are really the only possible two options here. Says, I'm happy for Dakota and Raquel, but I'm worried for Io, Tommaso, and LA Knight. I'm worried for pretty much anybody who goes from NXT to the main roster. We've got Cameron Spencer. I keep hearing how boring the product is. Going full on comedy will not please everybody, but you'll have less people calling it boring. What are your thoughts? I mean, a good part of NXT is already a comedy show. I didn't even mention the segments with Indy Hartwell and Persia Parada, because I don't give a shit about that story. Going full-on comedy, though, would certainly give me a reason to stop watching the show. So I would rather they not go full comedy. Lord Frieza, it's crazy how Breaker's voice is literally a mixture of his uncle and his dad. I cannot unhear it. Yeah, no, if you closed your eyes, you would swear that it was Scott Steiner when he speaks. More so Scott than his own father. You would swear it was Scott Steiner. It's kind of eerie. Ojali Burgos with the $5. For as much unnecessary hate NXT 2.0 gets, I'm proud of everyone's involvement for today's show. Great show and makes me excited for tonight. It was a very good show. Naif Alsafar. Dropping to $2.99 twice. Nayef, thank you. Kenneth Taffy with the 10. Since yesterday is the 10th anniversary of WrestleMania 28, how do you feel about it after all these years, especially since it was your first in-person WrestleMania? By the way, the E is silent for my name. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Taff. I thought it was Taffy. It is Taff. I will warn you, though, I might forget that in a few days because my mind is all over the place this weekend. So if I mistakenly say Taffy again, you'll have to excuse me. I didn't even realize that it was the 10th anniversary since that first Mania that I went to live. And, you know, it felt like a very big deal being there in Miami. And for good reason. It was The Rock's first singles match in like 8 years. And it was in his hometown. And it felt like a big deal. So it was very special to be there as part of that match. I remember the finish when The Rock, you know, got back up to his feet real quick and hit the rock bottom and the whole stadium exploded. All the John Cena haters were so happy to see him lose that match, including some people that were with me in my section who were very unhappy that John Cena lost that match. I was very happy with the outcome, though. I look back fondly on that Mania because it was the first one that I had the chance to go to live. And also, I got to meet a lot of really cool people and do a lot of really fun things. And yeah, I was in the pre-show press conference and I was asking questions to The Rock and John Cena. Mike Tyson showed up from out of nowhere and did that little thing with Sheamus where they pretended to be, you know, like enemies with each other. Tyson was like right over my shoulder, basically. So I had the chance to do a lot of really cool things that week. Interview a lot of really cool people that weekend. The show itself, I don't look back on WrestleMania 28 as one of my favorites. I didn't think it was one of the better WrestleManias, but because of the personal experience, obviously I look back very fondly on it. So thank you for that question. Samoan Fan 101 about LA Knight. EC3 checked all the boxes as well. He did. He checked a lot of the boxes. And he also, he was never given a chance. He was never given the chance. I do think that LA Knight is, I think LA Knight is probably a better version of EC3. They're very similar in a lot of ways. I think he's kind of an upgraded version of EC3, but there's no doubt EC3 never got a fair shake. He got a raw deal. No question about that. Groovy Goose. Rude should have pulled a Bobby Valentine. That is a great idea. He should have put the fucking glasses on with the mustache. Then they wouldn't have known who it was. That's genius. I don't know why he didn't think of that. 8-9 Tech. Would there be a double turn in the main event? I don't know what main event. Are you referring to the main event today? No, there was no double turn in the match with Ziggler and Breaker, and I don't think there should be. I think that would be a terrible idea. Unless you're referring to a different main event, I'm going to say no. Rizzo just got off work, so I have to watch NXT Stand and Deliver later tonight. I heard Braun lost. I don't get that decision. Looking forward to WrestleMania. Thank you, Rizzo. Declan Malloy. Hate to be that guy, but how likely do you think it's that there'll be releases in 2 weeks' time? I think it's very likely. I mean, just look at the pattern. It's that time of year. I think there's a very strong possibility of that happening. Why do you think I called that the budget cuts battle royal last night? And Joseph Brooks, if Stone Cold Steve Austin is the only star whose fans never turned on him, meaning was there ever an instant where the fans booed Austin over the other star? Like how Rock had to deal with Hogan and Lesnar in 02. I can't remember an instance where they booed Austin against somebody else when Austin was still the babyface. I think if Austin had taken that match against Hogan, and honestly, in looking back on it now, even though I still think it's ridiculous we never got Hogan against Austin, I think Rock was the better opponent for Hogan at WrestleMania. I don't think there's any doubt that The Rock was the better opponent for Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 18, especially looking at the way things played out. If Austin were in that position, I also think he would have gotten booed, and I don't know that he would have reacted to that as well as Rock handled it. I don't think he would have. I think that probably would have been the first real instance of Austin as a babyface being booed against somebody else, and I don't know how he would have taken that. But I can't think of another example off the top of my head, no. And 8-9 Tech says, double turn in the Lesnar, okay, Lesnar and Reigns. I mean, there's so many main events this weekend. You got to be specific here. Main event in the Lesnar-Reigns match, a double turn. Huh. So I assume that would include Heyman going back to Lesnar, which wouldn't make any sense because why did Heyman then screw Lesnar in the first place at the Royal Rumble? Unless it was all part of the long con they were playing to get this winner-take-all match. I guess that could be an interesting story to tell. They could do it. I mean, they could do it. Yeah, I guess that would be interesting if they did a double turn in the main event. Heyman would have to turn on Reigns, though. He would have to. Would I do it? It's risky. You know, I really like what Roman's been doing. But then again, I mean, at what point do you kind of run into it's the law of diminishing returns where as great as Roman has been in this run, you know, you kind of run the risk of this becoming a modern day version of the Reign of Terror. You know, you think of Triple H from 2002 and 2003. I know some people already think this is a modern day Reign of Terror. I don't get that same, you know, it doesn't have channel changing heat with me the way a lot of Triple H's stuff did during that period. But you turn Roman babyface, he would have to retain a lot of the attitude that he has now. That's why I'm not really a huge fan of doing that. I wouldn't do it because the idea of having Reigns go back right now to being a babyface, he's so good in this role as a heel. My fear would be they would make him too much like a WWE babyface. That's not what Roman Reigns should be right now. At least if he was going to do some kind of a turn, it would have to be more of a tweener. You've got to handle it very delicately. Otherwise, you just end up with Roman Reigns, the babyface that we had from 3 years ago, and everybody, you know, doesn't want to see that. But I hadn't really thought about that. I hadn't really thought about the idea of doing a double turn, but I don't think it's going to happen. I'm sticking to Roman Reigns is going to walk in as the champion. He's going to walk out with both belts. Rizzo. The issue with that, Lesnar most likely is going away again. So what happens to the belts while he is gone? I believe that Lesnar signed an 18-month contract when he came back, and I think Lesnar is good through the summer. And he is going to be on the next pay-per-view, which is WrestleMania Backlash, and then I think the pay-per-view after that, which is Money in the Bank. How many TVs he'll be doing, I don't know. Lesnar's been doing almost every single week now for the past few months. He's been doing more television consistently in this run than he has in the last 10 years that he's been back in the company. But he's not going away after WrestleMania. He may not be on TV every week, but I think he is signed through the summer. So he's going to be around. He's not going away. He could win the championship. I could be wrong. Brock could win at WrestleMania because he's not going away. But I still think Roman is going to win. I still think he's going to win. All right, we are all caught up on your super chats now. Hit that like button, and if you are not a subscriber of the channel, I don't know what you're waiting for. Hit that sub button, because we got a lot of content yet to come this weekend. We got a lot of content hitting the channel every week. I am going to be back with you as soon as WrestleMania goes off the air. Whatever time that may be. WrestleMania Night 1 review is coming up tonight, and so I hope that you will join me for that. In the meantime, if you're looking for some time to kill, between now and WrestleMania, here's something that you could kill some time with, about 45 minutes, of Sound Off Gamer. Day one at the Performance Center. I had a very interesting day. Solomonster's first day at the PC. Didn't go so badly. So it's the beginning of the My Rise journey in Sound Off Gamer. That is currently up on the channel right now, and so I hope you will give that a watch in between your NXT fill and WrestleMania. We've got some time here. We only have about an hour. All right, let's do a quick Be the Booker and get out of here. How about that?
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
In the spirit of WrestleMania, we shall try to book a main event of our own. WrestleMania weekend is underway, and we are going to book Yokozuna, who got a shout out from The Undertaker at the Hall of Fame last night. He shouted out Yokozuna, but he didn't shout out Mick Foley. Very strange. I guess Mick Foley wasn't a part of BSK. So Yokozuna got a shout out. Crush got a shout out. Godfather got a shout out. His seamstress got a shout out. No mention of the man who he shares really the most talked about match of his entire career was with Mick Foley. It was very weird. But anyway, let's see. Yokozuna one-on-one. Yokozuna's been in a couple of WrestleMania main events before. Both of them against Bret Hart. We've got Yokozuna one-on-one with Bobby Roode. Bobby Roode and Yokozuna, TNA champion, by the way, Bobby Roode. I'm kind of indifferent to that. I don't love it, but I don't hate it either. Interesting. Bobby Roode and Yokozuna. Not the match that I was expecting, but that's what we do here on Be the Booker. We book a match and then we think about it. It makes us think. What would a match like that look like? Between those two men. Probably would not end well for Bobby Roode. We've got one last super chat here from, who do we have here? MST. We'll call him MST because I can't pronounce this fucking username. MST. Chances of WrestleMania 38 being better than WrestleMania 32. I think WrestleMania 38 has the potential to actually be quite a bit better than WrestleMania 32. And I say that as somebody who was at WrestleMania 32, and WrestleMania 32, for the most part, was not a good WrestleMania. That was not a very good WrestleMania at all. So I actually think they've got a pretty decent shot to top what they did in 2016. Oh, you know what? You're right. I forgot. I forgot about the women, like WWE. That's right, Paul Heyman in the chat. He says he forgot the women, like WWE does. I forgot the women's Be the Booker. Should we do Be the Booker for the ladies? All right, we've got to be equal opportunity around here. So let's return to Be the Booker. We have to be fair about this. I love that. I forgot the women like WWE. Paul Heyman is always quick with the witticisms in the chat. He's a wise ass, is what he is. They call him the wise man. He's a wise ass.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now
hit
time
the buzzer by
to
accident.
Be the
That's
booker.
For you, Paul Heyman. I'm giving Paul Heyman the buzzer. Follow the buzzers. All right. Let's do the ladies Be the Booker. It's only fair we do the men's match, and then we got to do one for the women. We start with Ty Conti. We know what Ty Conti does with those championships, her and Sammy Guevara. It'll be Ty Conti one-on-one with Stacy Keibler. You know, that would never have happened if you didn't remind me that I missed the women's Be the Booker. We could have gotten out of here without a buzzer. I blame you. This is your fault. You did this, not me. We almost got out of here without a buzzer. But we couldn't do it. Ty Conti against Stacy Keibler. Two very, very attractive ladies. Sounds like a fucking terrible match. A terrible, terrible match. So anyway. Josh says the piss break match. And Tundar, I'm not going to repeat what you just said. I think Tundar has to go take a cold shower. I'm going to go get prepped. By the way, the stream page is already up for WrestleMania Day 1. So go on over there, leave a like, and park yourself there. The chat is open already. The stream page is up for WrestleMania Night 1, the review. Coming up later tonight. I will see you then tomorrow, episode 750 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off. And tomorrow night will be the Night 2 recap for WrestleMania 38. So a lot of content left to come this weekend. I want to thank you for supporting me and joining me, and I will hopefully see you guys in a few hours right back here. I have to go change, but I'll see you guys back here on the channel for WrestleMania Night 1 later on tonight. Until then, take care, guys. I'll see you later.